Welcome to The Tribe of Two, the officially unofficial podcast for The Book of Boba Fett on Disney Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we're talking Chapter 2, The Tribes of Tatooine today. I've stopped calling it Season 1, Episode 1, whatever. They just call it Chapter, I'm calling it Chapter. So that's how it is here. Aaron, what did you think of the second episode?
I liked it a lot. It's a little bit Wild Wild West, a little bit Back to the Future, a little bit Lawrence of Arabia. You know, I mentioned in the first episode, I wonder if they're going to do something to kind of reclaim the sand person, because they've always just been kind of like this just ignorant. The best depiction is they're kind of a humorous hillbilly NASCAR fan that's trying to be a little bit too much part of the sport. But at worst, they're just savages. They just take people as slaves to torture them just because, and they're not a fully realized people. Let's put it that way.
Sure.
And I thought this episode was a decent stab at, like, you know, their canonical name is Tusken Raiders, right? Mm-hmm. They're Tuskens. They're just Tuskens. You guys are making the Raiders part. Not all of them are Raiders. And if some of them are, it's because you're trying to fucking hunt them like the American buffalo from trains. Like, so I thought that stuff was cool. The cultural stuff. I always love alien cultures and like how they blend different, you know, traditions and practices from Earth. Because that's, you know, that's all you can really do. It's really hard to imagine something truly alien. I love the huts. This is a longer episode, so it felt like it actually could do some things. Much better than episode one. What do you think?
Oh yeah, no, I totally agree. I was worried when I saw the 50-minute runtime. I'm like, oh boy, this can't be like episode one if they want me to stay interested in this. And it wasn't. It had a lot more interesting stuff going on, and we spent 90% of that time in the deserts of Tatooine with the Tuskens, with Boba Fett. And I was really worried when we started in there. I'm like, oh boy, this is going to do more flashback stuff. And the flashback stuff from the first episode was probably the worst part of the episode. It wasn't looking good, but then, yeah, it took a turn toward the interesting. I really liked seeing the culture of the Tuskens in this episode. I liked basically everything about the train scene when they actually get onto the train. That whole action sequence was really strong. It really delivered. And I like the stuff at the beginning, too, with, what I guess would be the current timeline with Boba Fett going to the mayor of Mos Espa and trying to figure out, you know, how are things going to go here? Like, am I going to have to start a war with Mos Espa in order to get this territory? And then the Hutt show up? Yeah, it was cool. It was really cool.
Yeah, like a lot of things I'm thought were kind of shortchanged or dumb. Like, who is this fucking mayor that thinks he's going to stand up to Boba motherfucking Fett? Like, come on. Like, even in the Star Wars universe, this guy is famous for, like, not being fuck-wittable. Like, in this particular area, it's like, you know, talking shit about Marlo in East Baltimore. You just don't do it. And then this episode, it's like, oh, well, maybe it's because the mayor knows that the Hutts are going to come in and reclaim. And suddenly, okay, you've got two made men, or a made man and a made woman, going against, like that guy from Good, you know, who's the guy from Goodfellas? Henry, who's not a made. And like, suddenly so it's like, oh, this actually is a lot smarter than I kind of took it for. It's, you know, I mean, this isn't Goodfellas, this isn't The Godfather, but a lot closer to the Godfather kind of thing that I was looking for, with a little bit of that still wild kind of west, western thing that the Mandalorian kind of brought to the table. I really dug it. I still think the theme is not great, but the individual elements of music in this episode kind of whipped ass. Like, the score for the train heist, I really, really liked the drum dance that they all did around the fire after Boba had been adopted into the tribe. I thought this stuff was really good. It just felt like this episode felt like something that the show was trying to say, whereas the first episode felt more like, oh, we got an obligation to do a Boba Fett thing, so I guess we'll put him on.
Yeah, but that's so weird, man. You want the pilot to really catch people, and But I don't know. Do you? It's Star Wars. It's Disney. Like, people are confident.
That's the thing. They have the confidence to know that, like, this is like, you know, a very successful, like James S. A. Corey. Mm-hmm. You're reading book eight. Maybe they can think, hey, we can take a couple. We can waste some people's time in the first few chapters because sure. we've written seven bangers and you're hearing it. This is the confidence. It's like, but on the other hand, I'm like, why wouldn't you release both of these episodes in the same week? Or yeah,
totally,
since there's no worry about commercialization or length, just make a 90-minute fucking banger episode for the first, because uh-huh. I would have been singing a different tune if I had seen this with the other 30 minutes than the first time when I saw it. I'm like, well, this is just kind of a Saturday morning cartoon Boba Fett, like, you know, kind of.
Oh yeah, and you could have cut 10 minutes easily out of that last episode of him just like walking in the desert, of failed escape attempts, of like just stuff that bored me in the first episode. Cut that, slam these together and make one big episode, or release them as two
but
parts.
That's, I don't know if I agree with that, because you have to build something between Boba Fett and these sand people, or it yeah. doesn't work. And I don't know that they did
slow. It was very slow in that first episode.
It was very slow, and it's tough because you've got, like, you know, it's essentially Tom Hanks and Wilson, because the Tusken Raiders at that uh-huh. point, he couldn't understand them, and vice versa. So, but like, that's the thing that, like, borderline didn't work for me. The fact that Boba Fett was this quickly adopted into the tribe and trusted, and the fact that Boba Fett would.
Gotcha.
Yeah, like I they didn't quite sell me of why Boba Fett would be attracted to, why wouldn't he just be like, fuck these guys, I'm getting away as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, like that experience with the kid and their mutual combat seemed to like, but you know, this guy's some weirdo warrior with a crazy moral code. And I keep thinking also, like, back to like what did Django said about himself? I'm a simple man just trying to make my way through the universe. Like, that's this guy's moral code. Like, he's not a good yeah. guy, he's not a bad guy, he's just, you know, they got kind of like a nihilistic look and of like, he just gotta, you know, he's not trying to make the world unduly bad, he doesn't want to go out his way to torture people, but like, if you're in his way, he'll walk through you. And also he gets very incensed in seeing the strong prey on the weak. Like, that's something, and that sure. feels like this isn't exactly the same guy that, like, I read about in Tales from the Bounty Hunter, you know, the early attempts to kind of like resurrect Boba Fett, but mm-hmm. they've taken a little bit of those elements from my childhood memories, my teenage memories of reading about this guy, and the fact that he's, you know, kind of morally gray, but he does have a moral code that's very strong, and he's got, you know, strict rules, and weaves into this new fiction, you know, the stuff that they added with the prequels, that, oh, Boba Fett's just a clone, and somehow the sum is better than the parts.
sure.
So I yeah, it's a good episode.
Let me ask you this. Do you think there's a hint of white savior stuff going on in this episode?
Okay. I'm not going to try to say I got too strong a position, because I'm not quite sure, but I also saw a headline, and I'm not even sure if it was a straight headline, that like this episode featured the first black Wookiee.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, if you're talking black and like, I don't think they, like I said, I couldn't tell whether this person is like super satirical or they're like actually excited to have black representation in Wookiees.
I thought it looked badass. Like,
it is badass, yeah, but like, this isn't like a cool black Vulcan where it's a person right. with like, it's a recognizable Africa, you know, or a person.
It's like
from
saying
Africa
it featured the first black cat. And I don't want to like,
yes,
I don't want to depersonify a Wookiee in that way. But you know what I'm getting at, right? Like, this is just
just last week or a couple weeks ago, this cat named Jorts took over the internet, because there was a story where there was some sort of business that had two cats. You know, that sometimes you'll have like a mm-hmm. liberal artsy farty place that allows sure. pets, and you got cats, and there's Gene, which is this tortoiseshell cat that's very smart, and you got Jorts, who is an orange tabby, who, you know, those are kind of renowned of being stupid cats. And this coworker got in an argument with another coworker because they'd made all these accommodations for Jorts being stupid. Like, they'd wedged this door open so he couldn't lock himself in. He'd, you know, and this one lady was like, no, we have to just take the time to teach Jorts. And she tried to do all this stuff and it wasn't working. And he kept on getting himself locked. And he said, look, you can't expect tortoiseshell smarts from a dumb old orange tabby.
Oh, boy.
And the lady got pissed and took it to HR like it was. And I'm like,
oh, that's a little far. Yeah.
So this is my roundabout way of saying it is. First of all, there is a fine line between white savior, white ally.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
And it's all about where the story is centered, and it's all about the type of assistance and the way that both sides feel about it and who asked for it and the and how like embedded in the culture and understanding, you know. So it's like this thing is tough because like these are Tuskens. They don't exist. This guy's a Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Also, he's not white. He's Polynesian. If you want to, like, if you want to, like, do some kind of fucked up racist pun at square, so like,
sure.
I think that I have got my ears open, ready to listen to the commentary that says that this is problematic, and I might say like, oh yes, of course it is, because I'm very sympathetic to those type of arguments, but.
I felt those alarm bells ringing when I was watching this stuff, especially when he brings back the speeders and they just start bashing them with sticks. I'm like, oh God, oh no. I'm a little worried about this, but ultimately I didn't feel like it went too far with that.
No. And also like some of that stuff is, you know, like you'll see that in, like Lawrence of Arabia. Sometimes cultural mores about like what you do with spoils of war is a lot different, you know. Mm. Instead of like, oh, we should use these supplies for our war effort, it's more of like, oh, I'm gonna take the shit and this made my participation in this battle worth it, and I'm gonna fuck off and go back home, you know. It's like suddenly the army melts away because they're built. So it's like sometimes things are just different, and it's not better or worse unless you're talking about an application where you're trying to destroy the Turkish Empire. But yeah, I don't know. I sounds like I the only thing I could think of is you could say this is a way to like sanitize or resmuggle in the idea of a white savior to where those kind of like paternal thoughts about indigenous people are rinsed through the lens of Star Wars, and it's no longer we're talking about Native Americans and white settlers, and we're not talking about colonized people and we're talking about it's sand people and it's what but those attitudes will still when people watch them and you know we might perpetuate more shit in the future because people forget the lessons we've learned.
Yeah, I felt like the problem that I saw here, if there is a problem, is that they felt helpless until Boba Fett steps in and does something that they could have done all along and just like shows them the way, you know, like that was the real problem for me. But I ultimately, like I said, I don't think that was the intention, but who knows?
But he also taught. It's not like he did. I don't know. Is it if these people don't know how to work machinery because they've never fucked with that kind of stuff until people landed from the stars?
And I think that might be why it's saved here for me, because it's like,
yeah, because they do it themselves. Like the thing that defeats, like, in fact, Boba. Here's another thing. It's like, in fact, Boba's ass would have been handed to him at least twice on that train had it not been for the valor and skill in combat. Plus, the training went both ways.
They were training
Boba
him with
taught
the
them
stick,
how to ride the speeders like the Bantha, which was hilarious. And these guys taught him how to fight with this guy, you know, taught him a complete, you know, the most famed bounty hunter in the universe, a completely unique fighting style, the what that could best him in these conditions. So it went a little bit both ways. But again, I'm just a 45-year-old white guy from southern Indiana. I could have gotten a lot of this wrong.
Right. Same here. Okay. Why don't we get into the recap? But first, let's take a quick break.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead, unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, we start off with Finnick escorting her prisoner back to Jabba, I guess Boba's palace now, where Boba tries to question him. The prisoner won't talk, so they drop him in the Rancor pit, and that causes him to confess that the mayor sent him before they reveal that, oh, there actually was no Rancor all along. We tricked you. I feel like they shot this a little weird. They maybe gave away too much, and I don't know if they do this because like there are kids watching and they get excited about this stuff when it's obviously not real, but
the 40-year-old kids.
Yeah, this 40-year-old kid was looking at that thing going, you know, if there was a Rancor in that cage, I would be seeing it by now. I'd be seeing it with the first crack in the door, not, you know, when it's half open and this guy's an idiot because he doesn't see. Yeah, there's a lot going through my head, but it was fine.
I thought it was cute. I thought the walking up to Jabba's castle was super nostalgic. You know, this is like
very that outdoor shot,
and the portcullis opening up, and then walking through it. And I thought that was really cool. And honestly, I knew
Luke doing it.
Obviously, I knew that the Rancor wasn't going to be there.
Yeah,
but I was thinking there might be something, a fun twist, like the Rancor is only going to be like this up to this guy's knee. Because they got it, like you know, like Jabba, of course, is going to get a Rancor, but they had, you know, they don't start off that big. You gotta, so it would just come like rampaging out of there and start worrying his ankles and shit, like a annoying dog. Sure. But yeah, I part of me is like, you know, I know Boba doesn't want to capture or torture and all that, but like. Some of this stuff that plays cute, it takes away a little bit of his like fearsome reputation, right? If the word gets out that like, oh, Boba's not going to torture you, but I guess if he kills you,
right? He likes disintegration, which is only torturous in the milliseconds it takes to tear your body apart.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, the way that it's like, you know, Boba Fett will never torture you, but he'll bluff the shit out of torturing you. Like, but
yeah,
it's a funny
and
joke.
Also he'll his reputation will precede him, right? That he doesn't torture, he just kills. So you better tell him what he wants to know. Otherwise, you're just dead.
That's true. He's not the one's going to fuck around and say. I also thought it was kind of cute. The, you know, the this Assassins of the Night Wind, the reputation is fear no man. But that leaves open the door to fearing Rancors. And
also Order of the Nightwind. OK, maybe I shouldn't be watching this show because it's rated TV-14 and I am clearly a child. But that's just sleep toots, right? Like. The Order
Dude,
of the
I
Nightwing.
Was at this, I was about. I was trying to set up the same fucking joke. That's just a loose translation from basic in the original Hutt tease. It's the Assassin of the Farts.
Right.
It's the Assassin of the Dutch Ovens.
God, I'm a child. But yeah, when I heard that, I cracked. We both. Yeah, this is why it's a family show because
it's a family
kids
show.
Got that for sure.
Is there gonna be families across that like that's like you know someone's you know anyone time if you fart after sundown the Assassin of the Night Wind strikes again. If not, there will be now.
And they're continuing to lead on this tension of like, hey, we've got a droid that tortures and we've got a leader that doesn't torture. And 8D88 is the name of this droid.
And I finally, I finally heard the Matt Berry now when I was listening for it. I'm like, this has got to pay off, right?
Eventually, I would hope so. Yeah. I imagine we're going to spend a lot of time in this place, unless the Hutts have their way.
You don't cast a guy with this distinctively funny a voice without uncorking him at some point. It's good. I hope so anyway.
We'll see. All right. Next scene, Boba and Finnick take the prisoner to see the mayor. The mayor claims he did not send the Assassin of the Farts and gives Boba a reward for turning him in and then tells him to go to Garza's sanctuary to get the full scope of what's going on here.
I love the design of the mayor's office, the mayor's building. It looks like a Scientology temple recruiting station, you know?
Okay.
But it's also subtly like the cleanest building on the block. Like, you know,
I was thinking like it's Tatooine like courthouse.
It
much felt that way. It was good design.
And I do appreciate, the fact that like, and in a way that I don't think George even did in the prequels, like people are thinking about these things in terms of cohesive, like what is it saying? You know, you can do world building and it's doing it like subliminally just through the art and the production design. And, you know, hats off to them for sweating the details. Love the Ithorian.
Oh, dude.
I don't know that we've ever seen a furry Ithorian before.
Or one speak? Have we seen like a live action Ithorian speak?
You definitely have, but I think you just don't know it because they speak. Yeah, they got two. So, fun facts about Ithorians: 2 mouths, 4 throats, and according to that West End RPG game I played a long time ago, they can generate such a loud noise with that equipment that it can concuss living beings within, I don't know, I think 3 meters or whatever.
Yeah, and it's just like a rumbling sound, right? Is their voice?
Yeah, it sounds like that, like almost like a bullfrog kind of like guttural. And then there was like a little microphone that was translating it in real time.
That was cool.
I just thought it was a very cool. I mean, I'm pretty. That wasn't CG, right? That was just a prosthetic.
A puppet. I don't know.
And I'm saying that as a compliment. Like this thing looked fucking real.
Yeah, it looked great.
I loved it. And also, this is where it's like, oh, the mayor's not doing this because they're stupid. The mayor is actually kind of caught between a rock and a hard place, and we're about to find out where what the rock is.
Yeah. There's also some talk early on here about like, okay, the mayor of Mos Espa serves at the daimyo's behest.
Pleasure.
And there's a way that Boba phrases it that I don't know about you, but I always assumed that Jabba pretty much had control over the entirety of Tatooine.
Yeah.
I'm wrong about that based on what Boba is saying here. He says something about like, you only serve because the daimyo of Tatooine deem it so. Not the Daimyo of Tatooine deems it so. It's the way he uses this term to make me think that there are a lot of Daimyo on Tatooine, and the one that runs the territory around Mos Espa might not be the same one that does the Mos Eisley or whatever. I think Mos Eisley is included in Jabba's territory based on, you know,
has
what we saw.
To be, right?
But, yeah, based on the original series, but...
I did not pick up that distinction, and like I wonder if that makes like is Boba Fett like the Tony Soprano, is like most Eisley like New York City, and Mos Espa's, you know, is across the bridge in New Jersey, like you're a crime boss technically, but you're more of like an up jump crew. That's an interesting theory. I don't know if I subscribe to it.
Yeah, we'll see.
But it is cool because it makes Tatooine a lot more interesting place to be as a crime boss, because it's not like, yeah, I thought he was the ruler of the planet too, and it's like, but
yeah, then he's got to go off world to find any challenges. It would make
I will
the
say
series
this.
Weird.
I will say this. It feels weird for the Hutts to come back for like one small position. It feels more like they would like Boba said, like it's almost kind of a stretch that they would even bother to fuck with Tatooine. But for whatever reason, they're here. Yeah. And it's like it'd be really small stakes if they're just fighting over one city on Tatooine.
Sure. I do think there's probably more behind why they came back for this.
Oh, for sure.
You know, we're going to see more about that here in the next few episodes. But I'm kind of excited by this. So Boba does go to Garza's sanctuary. And the Twi'lek running it tells him that a couple of Jabba's cousins have claimed his old empire. And just then they show up outside. Boba tells the Hutts that they'll have to kill him if they want their territory or his territory. And they say, all right, buddy, sleep lightly. And they move along.
I love the art direction. This litter where they have like dozens of slaves groaning under them, and it's literally even with all that support bending and creaking, and like maybe it's designed for one hut and these like brother and sister. And did you notice that they're like curled around each other like some kind of fucked up yin yang?
Yeah,
like their tails are mutually encircling, and they might have a Lannister thing going on.
Yeah, you can't tell me they don't. You cannot.
You know what? Let's make it canonical, because they're never going to show Hutts fucking. True. Can you even imagine?
In a Disney
Maybe
program,
they are.
Though.
Maybe they are. They could be doing it right now. We'd never know.
That's true. I don't even know how that works. I don't know.
Their tails are red. They're hiding a lot. Everything below the waist is in tail. You don't. Yeah. Right.
We don't know
how these things reproduce.
Yeah, Disney will never show it, though, even though that's what the fans really want.
Yeah, they want to see Hutts fuck. Hutfuck.com. They got the tattoos on their faces. I thought that was cool because it's like something different, you know, but also like plausible. I liked how he's using like, you know, that little white rat as like a sweat rag.
Yes.
It's so fucking funny. Yeah, it's like one of those. He reminded me of like Christopher Walken in what was that? The Rundown. You know, like this colonial guy who's like overseeing this very hot climate, and he comes out in his white ice cream suit, and he's always, you know, he's sweating because he's not doing any work. He's just
Paul Giamatti in that new rock movie
in the Jungle Cruise. Exactly. Cruise, yeah. The white guy in the jungle / desert who runs everything because, of course, he's not working, but he's sweating like a motherfucker because he's either fat or not used to his climate. Yeah,
and I like when they're having this conversation because it goes on for a while. And the whole time these people are under this platform carrying these two Hutts, and every once in a while, one of them will like half stumble, like they're about to give out under the weight of this thing. I don't know. The acting was really good here.
And then their Wookiee bodyguards assassin is a total badass. The design on this guy is just fucking cool.
Yeah, no, I thought it was cool. Anything else about this scene, or should we move on to flashbacks?
I'm trying to think. Oh, the way that this is kind of mementoing forward with like simultaneously telling the story of where Boba came from the pit to where he was at the beginning, you know, to the Mandalorian. It seems likely we're going to meet Bib Fortuna again.
Yeah, Yeah, probably.
So I'm kind of excited about that. Like, I wonder how close it'll make him look. Like, will they just like digital actor them so it looks exactly like the guy from, you know, I will also say the Twi'lek look has come a long way. They're a lot more like recognizably human, like, you know, usually attractive, conventionally attractive humans with tails on their heads versus like, you know, Ben Fortuna is a freak.
Yeah.
If he didn't have tentacles on his head, he'd be a fucking freak.
Oh,
all these guys he's at the Oasis and stuff.
It's
fucking torn up from the floor up. If these guys, if you shaved their tails off, they just look like bald attractive bald people.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like are they gonna recast Bib Fortuna? Gonna digital him up? They're gonna prettify him? They're gonna glow him up?
Disneyfied Bib Fortuna? Is that what you're saying?
Giant eyes.
Oh,
giant
God.
Moana eyes on this guy. Yeah. Yeah.
I am looking forward to that. I wonder if they stick with the original look 100%. Because I can imagine he's just like a twisted version of a Twi'lek, right? Like, Bib Fortuna didn't seem
he
like the world's greatest
guy.
He could
just be like an irradiated Twi'lek.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's just like ridden with tumors and shit. He's not like necessarily an ugly Twi'lek. He's like a... Yeah, something's got something wrong with
all he's had to eat in the last 15 years has been those frogs that Jabba's feeding everybody.
That would do it, man.
Yeah,
that would do it. I guess one last thing is like I love the way the sister is characterized as kind of being like they don't have a back and forth conversation. She just whispers between his fan and he just says what she says. So it's like is this weird kind of like maybe women aren't allowed to speak, but they're making it clear that like she's the brains behind the operation.
Yeah.
And just the fact that she's hiding her, like her mouth is so big that she would need three fans to like, full, like hide her. But it's, I don't know. I loved it. I loved how they characterized these two huts.
Yeah, it's good. All right. We go to back to tank flashbacks. And we're back with the Tuskens where Boba is training with a Gadurfi stick. A train rumbles by and the Tuskens prepare for battle and starts firing at him. It kills a few and then it passes. And that night, Boba helps burn the bodies and Boba says he'll stop the train. So they let him go. And stop me if you want to talk about any of this, but I'm going to take us all the way through.
I just want to say that scene. I do. This is where it's like everything from his training with the Sand People moving forward tracked. I felt like there's a big chunk that I don't know. I guess he's came back and he killed this six arm deal and he saved their kid and he's just suddenly training to be part of the tribe. I felt like maybe that first episode should have been longer, although you would have probably put a blaster rifle to your head.
I mean, if it was boring as the rest
more.
Of what they did, sure.
Yeah, but I guess they did enough. I just felt like it was a little abrupt that he's just like no longer, you know, he's just free to go about his business. But I guess maybe if he wanted to run, he could have murdered the child, the dog, and then ran off and they'd never been the wiser. So
that's the real thing. He came back with the kid. Yeah, it was fine.
It's just tough when you've got a nonverbal interaction. Like it's really, it's hard to do that well. And you know, it's like Enemy Mine with Louis Gossett Jr. Sometimes you can do it, but it's tough.
Well, when they got to the sign language stuff that they were doing in this episode, I thought it was really good. It felt like very intuitive. Like as he was speaking and as they were speaking, I could almost tell what they were saying without having studied the sign language of the Tuskens, exactly what they meant. So
it is wild because like you remember when we were talking about the movie Castaway, we did that. I think we did a movie last year. It's just really hard to do scenes in utter silence. It has like the stuff you're doing has to be like just super fucking interesting and just very high stakes. And maybe that was the problem with the first one. Like it's the first episodes. I wasn't completely invested on either side of this stuff. And the stakes were like, well, Boba Fett's not going to fucking die.
Of course.
Like Tom Hanks could have fucking died on that island. Yeah. I don't know what kind of movie that's going to be. So it, you're right. As soon as they started actually communicating and I kind of liked the sign language stuff, it picked up immensely because they could start telling the story.
Yeah.
That could be invested in it, you know?
So Boba Fett goes to a cantina where a speeder gang is causing trouble and cleans house. And then he takes their speeders back to the Tuscan camp, intending to teach them how to ride and stop the train.
Yeah, he goes full on Jake the Mus mode, just busting grills left, right, and center.
You mentioned Jake the Mus a few times. I'm not sure if people
All right.
The movie that that's from is not like a blockbuster. So tell us what that's all about.
No, I never even seen it I wasn't commissioned. But if you want to see Tamir Morrison fucking acting in a real ass film, find however you can, because it's kind of a tough find. It's a New Zealand film, Once Were Warriors. And he plays a character named Jake. They call him Jake the Musk because he's just like fucking muscles on muscles.
And it's from the 90s. He is prime, man.
You see him. I just read an Alan Sepinwall interview where he was talking about in the episode 2 filming that, you know, that they were filming on the set was being pelted with rain because of that fight that he did with Obi-Wan on the landing platform. And I guess in between takes, Tamir Morrison kept on doing the Singing in the Rain bit from the movie Singing in the Rain. I guess to an annoying degree. You know what I mean? Let's just sing and dance, and he does both in Once Were Warriors. So if you want to see, you know, Singing in the Rain, Tamir Morrison, check out Once Were Warriors. It's a great film. He's Jake the Musk mode. He's just busting these guys up.
That's true.
And then I love, because like, I like at the end how he just like, because these guys were stealing people's drink and food, and at the end he just grabs one of their drinks and like just washes it down in one move. It's funny.
Yeah, it's good. And then I saw him, I thought he was selecting like the best speeder, but it turns out he was selecting all horses. He's just figuring out how to lash these things together, right?
Exactly. I thought that was so funny too. Like he stole one and then it just keeps paying it back, and he stole them fucking all. He out-terminated Arnold.
I also like the, you know, this feels very Lucas. This feels very Star Wars to me, this biker gang that's just now a speeder gang.
Yeah, like American Graffiti kind of.
Exactly, yeah. Like, these are just punks, right? And they're punks you could see on the streets today. It's just, they're sci-fi punks, so they're riding speeders.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so Boba comes back and he has all these speeders and he teaches the sand people how to ride and continues. Excuse me, I probably shouldn't call them sand people, especially in this scene. Boba teaches the Tuskens how to ride and continues to train with a Gadurfi stick.
Yeah. My favorite part about this is when he was trying to teach him how to ride and he's like, you got to do it like a bantha. And he does this elaborate riding pantomime.
Yeah, it's just good.
Like, this is Boba Fett, people. He's riding like a bantha. It's hilarious.
Mm-hmm. And then after the training is done, the next time the train rides by, the Tuskens mount up and go after it. And some of them make it onto the train and they fight their way to the front. And then turns out the train engine is overloading. I'm not totally sure why, if this is a malfunction or if this is intentional by the robot, but Boba is able to crash it into the dunes before it goes critical. This is great. I was getting like big Back to the Future 3 flashbacks, especially when people are hanging from the side of the train,
dude,
and the engines are kicking in to a higher gear.
I'm pretty sure that droid did everything Doc Brown. Like, there's like this like a little rotary thing. Like, it was literally a steam engine thing with just LED panels and shit.
Right.
And
looking at his watch, the red log's about to kick in. Yeah.
Yeah, and they got, instead of like a smokestack, they got like a plasma engine. Like, it's really, my idea was that he was trying to make it go as fast, like trying to get to where they're going as fast as they could.
Yes. Yeah.
And that like stress blew up the train because, you know, I mean, probably nothing good is going to happen if they take it over. So this is a great scene. The only thing I would criticize is the initial shot of Boba Fett riding with them towards the train looked fake as hell. Everything else was really well. And I was like, trying to look for the seams of like the volume, because I know a lot of that stuff on top of the train, they were just doing volume shit, and it just looked really good.
I thought so too, and I thought it was exciting. You know, it kept it could have got stale. It's a pretty long train, and if they're just running over the top of it fighting guys, it might have gotten stale after a couple minutes. But the engine stuff kept it fresh. But like, there
they
was
kept
enough
on escalating
going on.
It. Yeah. I also like the beginning. They had the tribe's best warrior still teaching, you know, gaffy stick stuff with Boba, and Boba finally learned the disarm move. Mm-hmm. And then this guy's like, look how next level this shit is. And he just like rolls to the side and then puts him on his ass, grabs the stick, puts him. That was cool. That was a really well done stunt.
Yeah. And then that warrior comes in themselves and starts.
Yeah, where
ass.
Boba's like, yeah, he's fucked, and there it's looking grim, and he just like goes to the train, and they do that. I'm a sucker for this. Like, if you do it all the time, it's lame and cheap. But like, when the badass goes into something, you can't see what they're doing. You can just see like guys flying through windows and getting pulled down through hatches like the Graboids and Tremor. You know,
No, it was cool.
Like it's like the implied ass kicking that's going on. And you've seen him kick ass, so you know I'm a sucker for that.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And then afterward, I love the. I guess maybe we can talk about the next part of this scene, the aftermath. The Tuskens sort through the cargo, and Boba asks the leader of the train faction if they have spice on board. They do. Boba tells the train people, I don't know what the name of this faction is, so I'm just calling the train people, that they have to pay a toll to the to the Tuskens to pass through their territory now. And he sends them packing with some black melon milk to keep them alive.
Finally. Got a canonical name for these things. Uh-huh. Black melons.
You got the blue milk. You got the black melon milk.
Bam,
all kinds of milk.
Oh, black melon.
I absolutely love when he's like, the Tuskens are rummaging through the cargo and Boba is sitting there exactly like he sits on the throne at Jabba's palace and being the daimyo of this busted ass train, right? Like he's telling him how it's going to be. He's judging. Yeah. He's in the exact same pose. It's so good. So good.
Also, Temuera Morrison, when he's in this scarred Boba Fett, he's very like Deadpool. You know, he's a testicle of teeth. And Temuera Morrison has got a set of fucking chompers. And he, every time I notice it in fights, every time he's in fights, he bears them all. Like you can see all, how many teeth does a human body have? Like 32? All 32 are there. He's like daring you to knock him out. Like just like putting that grill out there.
These walls have never been breached. Bring it.
It's the fucking rocks of Gibraltar, except he's got 32 of them all in his mouth. Like I kept this train's going like a million miles an hour in the desert. And he's just like, give me all the sand.
I couldn't place it. I'm glad you called out that it's his teeth because it's not that his teeth are fucked up. It's just the amount of times he shows them and the number of teeth. That he shows
in that pale, scarred, wrinkly head, it is it's like the contrast. Like angry orange, you know, Thumb Wars kind of look. You know, I think once he gets in his normal Boba Fett skin, that kind of goes away.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will now notice that Temuera, he's like shows those pearly whites.
Yeah, fierce,
like a great white
face
when he attacks.
Hell yeah! All right, and then the final scene here that night, Boba tells the Tuskens that they no longer have to hide in their own lands. They give him gift of a lizard in the nose and apparently
nose lizards
sends him on a trip in the desert. And eventually he returns with a branch from the tree he saw in his vision. And he's officially made a member of the Tuscan society and they have him create his own Gandurfi stick.
See, now this is the kind of a truly alien world building. He's going to go on a vision, but like a vision quest involving a lizard that goes into your brain and literally guides you to a physical object that you couldn't find otherwise, a branch in the fucking desert, and then comes back and it's all some kind of mystical thing that this lizard can smell wood from 500 miles away or something. I fucking thought that was, at first I'm like, well, this is the stupidest thing. And then we started tripping and then I realized what was going on. I'm like, oh, I actually think this is kind of cool.
I was worried that they were going to turn Boba Fett into a lizard-led automaton until this thing came back out of his nose at the end.
Yeah.
I was worried that like, oh, we just now have to chalk up everything Boba Fett does from here on to lizard in the nose, right? He's got a lizard on the brain. That would have been disappointing, so I'm glad it came out at the end.
Where I was at when it happened, I was thinking like, is this kind of like some kind of symbiotic thing where like our sand people... Or I'm sorry,
yeah,
Tuskens.
Every Tuskens has
a combination humanoid and then like the Trill from Star Trek.
Sure.
And like, what is it? Is that going to be
like
why?
Raficon, right? Like that sort of thing.
Well, that's but that started to make sense. I'm like, oh, well, that explains why he shows up looking like a Tusken Raider with a gaffy stick. God damn it, Tusken Raider. Look at me. Look at me.
Raider.
Being specious.
Get that word out of your mouth.
I know. Anyway, he comes out looking at the desert, looking like a Tusken with the gaffy stick. He's just like in a very real way a Tusken now. Nah, it's just a vision lizard.
Well, yeah, so at the end of this, he is sort of in a very real way a Tusken, right? He he comes through this. They officially welcome him into their tribe and have him create his own weapon. Like, it's lovingly crafted under the guidance of their...
Very cool.
What, weaponsmith?
Yeah.
Their woodsmith. Yeah. I don't know what to call him. And then the thing that surprised me was they don't give him a mask. I don't know what about the culture doesn't either entitle him to a mask or doesn't. Maybe the masks aren't required. But I was thinking, like, they're native to Tatooine. It strikes me as strange that, like, a mask would be required to live on a planet that they're native to. So it must just be that they wanted to show Temuera Morrison's face on screen.
And it's because, like, I always thought that the Tusken's face stuff was just like Bedouin times a million. Like, every square inch of their skin is exposed. They looked out through these little tubes because the sun's so bright. It's almost like kind of like one of those you know, like the Inuit people made those snow sunglasses that are like the slits, the blinds, the Venetian blind looking. And I thought that it's like, but like, yeah, I kind of thought that they would, and but they didn't. It's like, why would they go 95% of putting this guy in their tribal uniform and then, I don't know, maybe you got to earn your mask. But the kids have masks.
Right, they haven't earned shit.
I would love to know what a Tusken looks like underneath that mask. Like, canonically, because I know there's been a few. I actually looked, and there was a couple, like, comic book illustrations. But, like, nah. I want to see some. I want to see a Tusken unwrapped at some point. But, they burn him in those. Like, maybe cradle to grave. It's like, as soon as you come out, they just swaddle you up and stick the pipes in there, and there you go.
Think you come out with a mask? Maybe that's not a mask. Maybe it's part of their body.
How did the kid drink out of that melon?
Just through the wraps.
Through the straw. Like, don't they have, like, they do have, like, pipes there. Maybe those are specially engineered to drink out of a black
straws.
Melon. Yeah.
They seem hard to drink out of. There's a lip that goes the wrong way on those black melons that seems like it would just make it dribble down
your
chin.
I think it would be very not graceful to drink from that thing.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they just didn't have a mask big enough for his gigantic bulbous boba head. Because Temuera Morrison's got a big head, too.
He's got a big head.
Yeah. Of all the actors, he probably has the biggest head in the show.
The Tusken's like, we can't cover those teeth. We don't have enough fabric. There's not enough fabric to wrap around that part of your face. We have very little fabric in the desert. You know,
first time we got in a fight, it'd just tear it open again.
It just busts out of a mask like the Hulk busts out of his pants, you know, just like boom. I guess the pants are one thing the Hulk can't bust out of.
He busts out of his calves shirt. Yeah.
He busts out of his lower pants and in complete upper fashion region. His upper fashion region, Jim.
His upper fashion region. In this, also, do we want to talk about his visions that he sees here? He sees his father abandoning him on Camino.
Yeah, did you see? I don't know how serious to take this, but there was, I had a couple thousand likes and retweets. A guy complaining that when they revisualized Boba holding his father's head, that they digitally removed one of the big dead dinosaurs in the arena, and they were like, fucking Disney changing shit for no reason. Blah. I'm like, dude,
why would you do that?
Well, like, I'm
not going to complain. I'm not going to throw my hands up and shout and scream about how stupid it is. But why would you? Why would you bother?
The only thing I could think of is that when you see it in the original shot, it, like, really dominates the background and, like, draws attention to itself. Whereas if you want to really isolate Django, like, it's not a clean shot of, like, just all you see is Django and the desert, or Django's head, Boba's body, and the kind of, like, you know, the arena behind him with a few battled. So it might have been just an artistic decision. But, like, the fact that anybody, like, Jesus, for this, anyone that's a fan of this franchise to get upset about minor cosmetic changes to original material.
Can we also point out that this is not original material? This is a flashback going on this is a vision.
That's
going
another
on in
perfectly
Boba
valid
head.
One. This is Boba Fett's memory of his father, and he had his right. back turned to. You know what? He had his back turned to that dinosaur. Uh-huh. It would have been unrealistic if he. No, I don't actually even know. But yeah, it's that's another perfectly valid way to not fucking lose your mind because somebody airbrushed out a dinosaur. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Star Wars fans are masters of coming up with rationalizations for things.
Sure.
We had to do it for decades, even on that original trilogy. There were a lot of gaps 100%. To fill in, a lot of things that didn't quite make sense if you looked at them. But yeah. from a certain point of view, it could all make sense,
view,
right?
It's fucking rad. The other, I thought it was cool, the whole, you know, the tree that's entrapping him, and it's like full of, although the eyes, it reminded me of like Jawa eyes, like he... You know, he had this traumatic experience of the jaw was taking his armor. And his pictures of him as boy, his dad leaving him, he being afraid. The oceans of Tatooine was kind of the close of it.
That
I thought
was
that was
cool.
Kind of,
yeah, the
remind me a lot of
they talk about the yeah, Dune some, Sea, right? And that made it feel like a Dune Sea.
That it felt like Dune too, like almost a prophecy.
Yeah,
there's no fucking way they're gonna bring the oceans back to Tatooine though. Can you imagine?
Oh.
I would love that. I would love for them to Arrakify Tatooine.
Just
because
open
like
all the blue melons at once or black melons at once.
They do. They do. The crate dragons have been collecting the black. Yeah, I'm just completely rip off Dune and do it that way. And then because like the thing is that Star Wars is a very static place, right? Like Alderaan got blown up and then they got fucking cold feet about doing anything permanent ever again.
Yeah, sure.
Like, fuck it. Tatooine's ocean planet now. Get your desert planet, update your Wikipedia entry, change it to ocean world. Like, I think that would be kind of cool if there was like a big, long-standing, permanent change in the Star Wars universe to something iconic.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see.
Other than the destruction of the Jedi Order. I guess that happened. That was pretty big.
Yeah. And Boba Fett taking over Jabba's palace. I don't even know what to call it anymore. It's disappointing.
It's Boba's palace.
I guess so. It just doesn't feel right.
We gotta stop calling like Jabba's throne. It's Boba's throne. It's Boba's palace.
Yeah. All right, that's it, man. It's the episode.
I love the music at that. That when they're all dancing around the fire, doing their little tribal dance. I thought that was pretty cool. It's a bop.
Yeah, it was.
I really enjoyed the Tusken crafting. You know.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Let's move on to the feedback. Of course, if you want to send us feedback, it's real simple. You just type in tribe@baldmove.com. You put that in some kind of email device, and boom, we get it. First up, Sean B says, "Hey, y'all." Hey, Sean. To me, it looks like the Sand Monster and Boba Fett episode one is an homage to Ray Harryhausen's Kraken from the 1981 Clash of the Titans, and he included some images.
Sure.
And I gotta say, Google that shit.
Yeah.
And Favreau seems like the type of guy who would be a big fan. Like a lot of these guys, even I'm a big fan of the Harryhausen stuff. I think it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like the last master we had of like practical special effects. Sam Winston, cover your ears. But like, you know, one of the greats who is still doing work,
motion,
you know,
sure.
into modern, like he was right there at the threshold. It'd be appropriate if true. Scott says, "Hey, thanks for covering Book of Boba as well as your other great programs. As usual, I appreciate all the fine work you're doing." Well, thanks, Scott.
Thanks.
"Did you notice that with this week's Book of Boba episode 2, we can start to fill up our Deadwood alumni bingo cards again? In a scene at the bar where Boba kicks the shit out of the space biker gang and steals their speeders, the bartender was none other than Alan Graf, legendary stunt performer and coordinator. As well as providing stunt coordination on Deadwood, he also played the fearsome Captain Turner, who gets his eye gouged out by Dan Doherty in a truly astounding fight scene in the Deadwood Season 3 episode, A Two-Headed Beast." It's not the type of two-headed beast I like to make. I don't like to be gouging men's eyeballs out when I'm making a two-beast formation. You know?
Okay.
Good Lord. Wait, that's the beast of two backs.
I mean, that's what I was saying. Sure, yeah.
"The scene is in the running for best fight scene in film, in my opinion. Still holding out for Jim Beaver as a salty Tatooine farmer."
Sure.
That
sounds good.
Kind of needs to happen. Mm-hmm. And you got Tim O.
Of course.
That's the gateway. Al Swearengen, can we get Al Swearengen in here?
He might be too hot for TV. He might be, I don't know, you put him on Book of Boba Fett, he might make the rating go up to an M.
Maybe that's true, because I was gonna say, I thought you were saying that he's like too big, and I'm like, I don't, he just did the American God
which
is genre work.
No one's
but you're
too
right,
big
that's
for
just
Disney.
Profane.
No
you're
one.
Goddamn right.
Yeah.
You're goddamn right. Someone try to tell the mouse no, see what happens.
Right? And see how big that check gets.
That's right. Riley G says, "As expected, we saw flashbacks at the beginning of our first episode, young Boba Fett holding up his father's helmet and a longer Sarlacc pit survival sequence." I gotta say, I saw something on Twitter where someone went back and the picture from the movie of Boba Fett holding his father's helmet up, they animated to where his head, Jango's head flopped out of it when he picks it up.
I knew it. I think I might have seen that before. Yeah.
It's really funny.
Because
it's
course really funny. Would.
Yeah. Yeah, that helmet had a head in it.
Uh-huh.
Empire Strikes Back knew that. When Luke cut off Vader's head, it mass blew up and there was a face in it. Because of course there would be. They don't vaporize just because this movie's PG. Anyway.
Riley continues, I took the two flashbacks as reminding us who this character was from the prequel and original trilogy movies, not telling us what we might see in the series. But maybe they did. I've always felt there was a glaring loose thread of how Boba Fett dealt with the Jedi killing his father. I'm not a psychologist, but paternal and maternal decapitations gotta be near the top of the list of childhood trauma. With or without their head rolling out between your legs, sure. Shouldn't Boba Fett have gone full rampage mode the first time he learned Luke Skywalker was a Jedi? Wouldn't he have done the same with Baby Yoda? It's an opportunity to tap into the drama of deep emotional trauma and use it to move away from the similarities of the Mandalorian. Mando is an even-keeled bounty hunter, whereas Boba could play a completely unhinged bounty hunter. Is this a Chekhov's decapitation long game, or is Favreau retcon Xanax and cognitive behavior therapy in this universe? Or even worse, as Kathleen Kennedy said, who cares? Bounty hunters are to Star Wars franchise as zombies are to AMC. Well, the only thing I can say about that is, so Boba saw his dad being killed and he goes onto insane, like he's like a montage of he's just going to start pumping iron and ejecting space roids and he's going to avenge his father's death. He's going to kill all the fucking Jedi. And he gets to be about 16 years old and Palpatine murders all of the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's the state of the galaxy for two decades. How long can you keep a hate boner going when your mortal foe has been taken off the map entirely?
Yeah. And also, I look at the situation when Boba Fett is introduced and the Jedi in question is his employer's son. And also, his employer is a Jedi. Well, you know, the equivalent of the Dark Jedi. And would
who did wipe out the other Jedi?
Ass. Yeah,
and but hated like, the Jedi.
But
yeah.
If Boba, like, he doesn't want his son killed, right? He wants to try and turn him. So, like, if Boba goes on a rampage and tries to murder Luke and is successful, he knows he's going to get his ass killed by Darth Vader.
Because Darth Vader's one guy who will fuck with Boba Fett.
Yeah, and could easily fuck with Boba Fett. Could destroy Boba Fett. So, like, Boba knows that even if he's got the hate boner going still after 20 years or whatever, he's not going to be able to go after Luke. I'm not even sure he knows that Luke is a Jedi until Return of the Jedi, when now he's in Jabba's employ, right? So, like,
right.
Yeah.
But still, I don't think you would ever, ever, ever go against Luke Skywalker and kill him if you knew who he was and what was good for you. Because you're right, Vader would stop your ass
until after Return of the Jedi. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're right. Like, Luke was just a dude. And the rebel, I don't think he got widespread claim as being a Jedi until, you're right, Boba was contracted to hunt him down and bring him in alive. So, yeah, and honestly, I'm looking for the Godfetter. I mean, I wouldn't be a fan of a psychotic Boba Fett. I think that would, you know, even if you could, like, say, well, he's not usually psychotic, but as soon as he sees a Jedi, he just goes, like, you know, Beatrix Kiddo when she sees one of the Snake Assassination 5, you know, just red alarms and flashing, and
it's always a weakness in a character, though, right?
Yeah.
Like, that isn't, yeah,
introduce a new character if you want to tell that. So, because, like, yeah, psychotic bounty hunter in the Star Wars universe, if we're gonna have another bounty hunter show, why not?
Sure.
But it wouldn't it's not how I have ever seen Boba Fett. But you're right, it would be something to differentiate. Although I think I'm starting to see how this is different enough. Like, it's still joke worthy that they've made two, you know, the first two live action are just not even slightly different bounty hunters. They're literally both Mandalorians with the Mandalorian armor, with the strict taciturn code. One guy can take his helmet off. I guess that's something.
Right.
But I, you know, credit where's credit due. They are starting to, like this episode even said, like, you'll find running a family is a lot more difficult than bounty hunting.
Mm-hmm.
This is a next level kind of thing that they're doing, whereas, you know, Mando is just a bounty hunter of the week kind of show. Mary Kay is closing us out here, says, hey, guys, happy new year. Happy new year, Mary Kay, to everyone listening. I'll be brief. I'm convinced that the whole past present storytelling and Book of Boba Fett is telling the history of how Boba Fett and Finnick has come together. The big reveal will be that she's under that Tusken Raider training garb. And it's likely they'll be the last two of this tribe standing before we hit the present storyline. I've thought that since the first episode when I interpreted some of the Tusken figures as female, but maybe this will be dry pie by the time you get it. Not yet. What do you think about this, Jim?
The warrior could be her, maybe?
Warrior could be Finnick.
Yeah.
My question there would be, why they mask up Finnick?
Well, for the reveal. But, you not mask Boba when they make him part of the tribe? Yeah.
Because Boba can wear a mask. He does so frequently.
It's got to be head size.
Yeah, Finnick's chompers, jaw structure, and circumference is entirely a reasonable thing to clothe.
No, it's a good question.
If we ever have the misfortune of meeting Temuera Morrison, he's going to just beat our asses, Jim. He's going to beat, like, the 65-year-old man's going to beat our asses.
And he could.
Like Jabba's litter drum. He's just going to beat our asses. God help us. Oh, well. But the warrior, their best warrior, I was kind of debating that because I'm like, what does that even mean to be like feminine in this context? Mm-hmm. Like, they're lithe and they're a little thinner and they're like, but like, what the fuck? So like, I was trying to resist going there, but yeah, I'd kind of gotten a little bit of like trying to like see which is the lady Tusken.
I am interested in Tusken procreation. If that's what you're getting at, I do want to know the mechanics of it. Much like
we know
the
Hutts. They have them. We know they have them.
Yeah, they have kids there. I see them.
Anakin slaughtered not just the men, but the women and the children too. So
true. Yeah, but much like the Hutts, I want to know how they fuck. And so yeah, I'm naturally questioning these things. But also the warrior, right? Like, she is a fierce warrior, Finnick. So. If any of those were going to be Finnick, I assume it would be the warrior. But boy, that really casts some. Sorry, I don't want to get in the way of your joke. Go ahead.
I said, come on, Disney. We got Disney Plus. We need Disney XXX so we can settle some of these questions.
Nothing but
cartoon fucking Hutts, entwining tails. Mm-hmm. What's going on in Twi'lek tails? Everyone wants to know, right? Tuskens,
red mask diaries. Let's
what you got in those robes, Tuskens? Yeah, we want to know it all.
I don't know. It would make me question, like, okay, if Finnick is the warrior, then does that mean this tribe has no warriors before Finnick? Because I don't think Finnick like is a Tusken.
Oh, no way.
Right. So like, they all look like Finnick. Sure.
Yeah, underneath there. Yeah. Okay.
So did the tribe not have a warrior before Finnick joined them? If she's the warrior?
No. I think those guys, these people all seem like badasses, you know, with their sticks and their rifles and stuff.
Certainly handy with a rifle. Yeah.
You always got a best one. Now, that would be kind of. That feels like we're going back to problematic territory. If it turns out the best warrior of them that taught Boba Fett all of their ways was a foreigner, like, ooh, okay, now we're back to like,
sure,
Tuskens are fake people, but we'll see.
Yeah,
watching you, Favreau. That's it for feedback this week. tribe@baldmove.com. If you'd like to send us some next week, we would be happy to read it.
Turns out their best Bantha is a horse, just in a big mask.
I think that's literally true, right? Weren't Banthas like, or like they're Asian elephants or something that they just glued like mops and shit to?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. The elephants were working in Bantha face. Shocking.
Sorry.
I'm telling you, some of this shit doesn't work when you remove it from the context of planet Earth, you know?
Totally.
Like I said, just a guy. Tell me when I'm wrong. I would love to hear it. tribe@baldmove.com. We'll be back next Friday with full coverage of Chapter 3 of the Book of Boba Fett. See you guys then. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.